How should we start? Should we start with like some stuff, some updates, what's going on with you? Definitely what's going on with you. I want to talk about that a little bit.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Many of you guys may know Ling is, she's been busy in Saigon making art, making noise, having exhibitions, crazy things that I've basically been dreaming of. But, you know, she's out there just like doing it all, like back to back.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't supposed to be back to back, and but then things kept getting delayed, so they ended up being back to back. But yeah, mm-hmm. I had a for those of you who didn't know, I had a solo show ish thing at the Hummingbird Cafe, which is like a coffee shop slash gallery space. And I guess this is a good time to kind of talk about exhibitions in general, I guess, because someone came, like a friend of mine who just graduated high school, he came to one of the show and he asked me basically like, what is all this, like how does this even work? And maybe I can talk about that too. So like the Hummingbird, there are all kinds of different gallery spaces, and it's a spectrum of how they work and what they can do for you. So maybe you got on one end, like the very traditional gallery that would take 50% commission of any work that you can sell, which sounds like a lot, but they would do a lot of work for you. And that type of gallery typically would have like a curator to like really like work with you on how to present your work. In a space, you know, so like how does an audience like walk into this space and like experience it? Or maybe like how to put your work in a group show, how to make it relate to other artists' work. And then there are people doing the graphics design, the marketing, the logistics of like, how do you bring your stuff to the gallery if you have like a house sculpture that's as big as your house? A traditional gallery would do that. And then you have like the rental gallery, which is basically just a space that you can rent. It's a daily rate. But there's all these other sorts of gallery and spaces in between those two ends. So for Hummingbird, this is also a shout out. Like Hummingbird Cafe, they have a tiny, not tiny, they have a medium-sized white cube on their mezzanine that they're willing to lend free of charge to any artist who want to propose any show or print show or any kind of art things like that. Hit them up, email them, message them if you want to propose like an idea for something to show everybody. For me, that's what happened. Like I could just use the space for free, which was perfect for my work because the installation that I wanted to make, I wanted to keep it in a smallish space and like really fill that space up. So that was the show at the Hummingbird. And for that show, I was showing my new works, which are like tape transfer of images, of screenshots of my ex-boyfriends and transfer onto Scotch tape. And then my latest show, that was like a pop-up show that was super quickly, about 3 days, like Friday night to Sunday night, it ended. And it was a zine launch by my two friends, Daek Jung and Daek Ding Vo. And then they invited me to put my portraits of them on the wall around the zine table. So that show, that was a kind of a more traditional gallery show. The guy who owns the gallery worked with us on like curating and everything else, and he gets a commission from the works that we sell.
Mm-mm. So what would you like? So I guess when it comes to like exhibiting work, even for me, I'm a total novice because I've never really done it. I've obviously talked to you a lot of about galleries. I asked you a whole lot of questions about galleries when you still worked at which gallery was it, like
Vineyard?
Last year or 2 years? Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I asked you like, you know, things like how does the sale work and what kind of like, you know, how do you price stuff, right? So are there, would you recommend, or not recommend, what's the word? I guess, like, are there any steps or traditional process that one photographer or artist should go through if they want to get their stuff submitted? Like, I know, even including myself, I think a lot of us are kind of clueless. Like, we think of exhibitions as, oh, like, these are, like, the achievements, right? Like, later on in life or something, like, you have to be recognized. But I feel like I do believe that you can exhibit your work really anywhere if you know people. Or so, I guess, what are the steps? Like, what should one do, like, you know, to get their stuff out there?
Yeah, I think it's important to know what you want first. Like, you shouldn't see every space or every gallery equal, not in terms of like status, but in terms of like importance to yourself. Like, you shouldn't see all of them as this one blob of like, I need to achieve that, because they're all very different, and you kind of have to know what you want too. I think that if you want to target that audience that go to a gallery and buy art at a certain price, then, you know, in that sort of systems, there are certain things that you have to do, like, well, not have to, but there are certain things that your work should be able to target. Number one, your work has to be critical of what's going on, you know? Like, if you produce something that looks like something that has already been done in the 60s, and they talk to you and you have no idea what you're talking about, you're like, oh yeah, like, this is a new thing, I'm experimenting, putting text on images, but you're not aware of the history of how people use text with images. I mean, you don't have to be super like academic about it, but you should know what you're doing. But I mean, there's also like, how do I articulate this? Obviously, if your thing is cool/good, it's what it is. It's cool. It's good. But of course, there would be instances where people would make something, and for someone who study art would be like, this looks exactly like what Barbara Kruger did. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, okay. Oh yeah, sorry. Let's use a very specific example. Do you know Barbara Kruger?
Right. The woman? I actually don't. I was gonna.
So she used, she made collages out of like magazines. She would tear out she would use like an image from magazine. She would put text over it. But the interesting part about it is the text that she was using was Futura, white Futura font on a red box. Does that remind you of anything?
Yeah, I probably have seen it. I just don't remember.
The interesting thing about it is that Supreme is using the same font and the same like type design that she used to use.
Okay, now that, and now you mentioned Supreme, now
that's
I
like
know.
A whole thing between yeah. them. So like yeah. Supreme was yeah. suing other people for copying them, and then Barbara yeah. Kruger was like, well, what about you copying me? So, you know, if you're an artist and you're working with, let's say, like a collage that criticizes like hype culture and consumerism, and you're using like the Supreme text to put in your collage in some way, like, you should be aware of, you know, this thing behind it, you know, that you're not just you have to understand that something came before Supreme. You have to do your diligence in researching.
Yeah.
So you don't really have to like have study art and be academic about it, but like in the work that you do, like, you kind of have to be, you know, yeah, do your due diligence and like do some research about it, so you really know what you're talking about and is critical about what you're talking about. What else? So you have to, people have to know your name first in some ways. So obviously that can be through, you know, friendly introduction. But even with that, you know, like when somebody introduces you, that doesn't automatically mean that they will care. So you do So mm-hmm. it all boils down to like actually doing the work on the ground and not just, I don't think connection's gonna cut it. So the work here is anything, you know, like joining a collective, having something interesting to talk about, like, what do you do? They're gonna ask questions like, you know, what is your work about? What else do you do outside of your work? So you can talk about your personal work, and then you can talk about like, oh, like I'm in a collective, or like, oh, like I organize photo walks, or like I've been in this group show. So, you know, open calls for group shows and all that sorts of things, like making zines, selling them. Yeah, just anything around the practice. They're not necessarily like steps to get to somewhere. For me, they're all kind of like I'm not in Beautiful Noise Collective just to have like a line on my CV. It's something that I genuinely do, because that will come through when they ask you like, so what is your collective about? And you better not say that, oh, it's just an Instagram.
It sounds a whole lot like, you know, I'm comparing this to
getting a job,
you know, because I haven't really been to like, if you go to any US universities, or I mean any universities, I guess like anywhere, I don't know why, just not just America, but you know, these career fairs and stuff like that, they kind of like walk you through like the whole job interview process. And I guess this sounds a whole lot like that, especially with, how when you're taking up this position, you're supposed to know like what comes before it. You know, you're not just I'm just here for the job, but you're also supposed to know what the job entails, what precedes this kind of job. What the company does, the history. These sort of career coaches would always remind you that you're not the only person with that, you know, impressive, you know, CV, right? Mm-hmm. Like there are other people before you, and you should know that, like showing your knowledge about stuff that comes before you is a bit more impressive than actually just talking about yourself all the time. Like, oh yeah, I'm the greatest, I'm the coolest.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Whatever.
But then what you don't know is all that shit has already been done before, you know?
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
So I think that's, I think a lot of people, even I get so stuck on that whole like just really the fun part which is getting my work to people, and then they see it and then they're like, hey, I want your stuff in my place. Like I always just think about like, how do I get there? But like, yeah, you're right. I think a lot of people,
but it's the same thing, you know, even just people on Instagram looking at your photos, like they've seen things before mm-hmm. you. So what has led them to you? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. but it's just not verbalized, but that's, that process is there, you know, what are you mm-hmm. doing that's different? And like,
yeah,
because some of that has to be intentional. Like you're intentionally doing something mm-hmm. different. And that provides people with something, even if it's not verbalized.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. And that's the one thing that like, before we really got into this topic, I never thought of my work has to not just stand out, because I think that standing out is not enough. You also have to understand that like what you're doing, like how is it different? How is it contributing to, you know, like the movement of today, or whatever community that you're in? How does it contribute? You know, things like that. Not just, oh, this is pretty cool, it's dope, I kind of want this, you know, on a wall somewhere. Like, yeah, that's not quite enough. I mean, it's enough to be, I guess, in like your friend's house, perhaps. But, you know, if you want it to be in a gallery, I do believe it, like lately, I've been really thinking about my work also after having one of our conversations about this, where you were basically talking about how certain people do this and that, but they don't know what comes before and like what's different. And I think you brought up one of my series as an example. I think it's the one where I'm basically like, it's the repetitive one with the girl sitting across from me, and you're like, that's different, like, and not different, but like that's how you're doing it, and like this and that. And I was like, oh really? Like, I had no idea, because I was just like, yeah, I mean, you know, this is kind of edgy, you know, putting different girls across from me, that whatever, right? But like, little did I know that was a feature that you liked, and you thought you didn't see that anywhere, or you had not seen that anywhere, and like, that would be something that would push the work towards an exhibition, right? That's just one of the contributing factors. And I just thought that was really cool. I think like after that day, and I just kind of went back, I looked at my archive, and I'm just ticking off like certain things, like, oh yeah, this been done before, this has not been done before, and I'm basically just re-evaluating my entire work. And that's why I have not been like posting or whatever, because I'm still in that process of not like hating my own work, but just kind of really being critical, right? Like, yeah, I this is not something that I want to show, because it's just, you know, it's already been done before, or it's just not that good. It doesn't really contribute to whatever dialogue that we're having right now, whatever conversation we're having right now.
Mm.
And yeah, I like that. I like.
Yeah, and it comes down to understanding, like, again, like, exhibitions shouldn't be seen as like something to reach towards. Like, they're also just another avenue to show your work, as well as like a, I mean, I don't want to sound dismissive of exhibitions either, but
no, I get what you mean. Yeah. It's not like,
but yeah, it's not about like not showing something that other people have done before just mm-hmm. to be intelligent, I guess, but it's like supply and demand, right? Like, if you're gonna put on a show, if people look at the promo and they're like, oh, like, I've seen this like a million times on Instagram, why should they make the time to come to the gallery and see your show? Yeah, and like what you said about the zine, you know, if you put all the pictures on Instagram, like, why should people buy your zine?
Yeah, like, having an Instagram and you post everything, you post literally every photo that you've taken, and then suddenly now you have a show of those same photos. I mean yeah, cool. Like, I get to see them in print, but like, I'm not gonna go a second time, or I'm not really gonna share it. You know, it's just, it lacks that sort of excitement. And I and that's probably the only thing that I can sort of simplify to maybe some of our listeners, is if you want to exhibit something, make sure it's like really worth seeing, I guess. I don't know, like, I think that's a, like, worth seeing even for you, I think, even for the artist. Like, don't, I feel like sometimes we sell ourselves a little bit cheaper, and we feel like, oh, I just gotta, you know expose myself, but like, no, it's just, think about it, be a little bit critical, in my opinion, you know, it's just my opinion. I feel like you gotta be critical, you know, think, like, I look up, one of my role models in being critical is actually Dong. Because that guy never shows anything. Like, he himself, and I've talked to him, and I actually want to talk to him about that on the podcast, but I feel like I'm exposing him too much. But essentially, he basically makes a work, he looks at it, and he's like, nah, like, someone else is probably doing it better, so I want to sit on this for a little bit. And then he sits on it forever, and he never shares. And I think that's sort of his own process. Like, I think the guy is sort of, he's basically compiling everything. He's like this giant, like, I feel like this sort
a
of
giant hoarder
yeah, his hoarder. He grinds through all the material, he watches every movie, he watches every edgy movie out there, and he basically just like, just cooking that soup, just brewing, stewing it, just like, you know. And that's something that, like, I look up to, because I can't do that. I leak every now and then. I feel like it's like, when I see something that's like kind of exciting, I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna put this on Instagram. It's
why do you have to be like, Tom, what's wrong?
I don't know,
doing what,
because
you're doing?
I think it's just like, it's a bit of self-discipline, I think, because, and here's the truth, if Tongue makes something right now, it would be worth so much more than what I, like, a zine or like an exhibition, right? Just not in terms of like quality, because of course anybody can interpret everything differently, but I'm talking about that sense of excitement,
right?
Just like how we have that joke, right? Whenever he posts, we're like, oh shit, you know,
like,
Coke Can
so
is posting,
exciting.
And then
yeah
we get excited, and then you know, because you want to see it, because you don't know what the guy's up to, and then suddenly he drops like this photo set, and you're like, oh wow, this is amazing. Whereas, you know, I just like, I like this thing. I want to put it out there. And, you know, obviously I'm not saying people don't like it. I like what I'm doing. I'm enjoying it. But in terms of like, it just, if we're talking about heightening the excitement, the worthiness of exposing something, he definitely has it better than I do, because he barely, you know, posts, and then when he does, everybody just goes nuts.
But that's just on like the marketing standpoint. You know what I mean? Like when we're talking about critical, it's not about being hard on yourself per se. It's but more not, about like.
Mm-hmm, but he's not doing that to market though. It's actually how he is. And that's I want to take it back to like. I mean, yeah, it's also a marketing thing, but he doesn't do it for marketing. That's just the way he is. That's just the way he is, and I do like that self-discipline. I do like that that kind of criticalness.
But that self-discipline, is that really being critical though? Just hiding your things because you feel like
that's what I mean.
Well, when you put your stuff out on and like the reactions the responses that you get from it, sometimes it's hard to get quality responses from Instagram. Like, obviously, your followers are not going to give you, like, a crit session, critique.
Of course, yeah.
But you have certain friends who will see it and who will say something, and that's important. That can be helpful for your work, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just keeping everything and brewing on it, it's not the only way to be more thoughtful about what you put out. Like sometimes you gotta put things out and adjust things and listen to some feedback. And
It sounds like we're roasting him, but we're not.
No. Just saying, I don't want to encourage you or anyone to sit on their stuff. if that's not what you already do. If for Tim is that,
no,
that's what he is already doing. So good for him.
That's we talked about this a lot, and I sort of make fun of him too, and he makes fun of me as well, because I'm, you know, like, it's not that I post everything a lot, but like I make it a point to share. Like I do talk to him like, hey, why don't you like, you know, put this on, like share it, you know. Even like put this on Patreon or something if you don't want a whole lot of people seeing it. But then he's like, nah, like I'm not going to. Or like whenever he makes a zine too, it's always so exclusive. He makes like 3 copies of it. And then I get one and he gets one. And then the other one just.
There's one left.
It's just like one left.
If I get that,
you know?
Then there's literally nothing left. That's ridiculous. Exactly.
So that's it's a good bad thing sort of. Like I look up to him because it's like having that self control not to splurge. Not splurge. What am I saying? But like.
But it's not self control. He doesn't have an urge to do it, right?
I hope to talk to him about that, because I want to get to the bottom of it, like the bottom of it, because it's like, is it self-control? Are you being critical, or are you just not afraid, but like just don't want to push it out there and get responses or something? I'm not sure. But we'll touch back on this whenever he's online.
Okay. But just a follow-up on what we were talking about, like gallery and how do you like make yourself known to galleries and stuff like that. Aside from everything that I said, that was quite idealistic, I feel. It's also like galleries are commercial. And if what you're doing, if they look at what you're doing and they think they can sell it, they're going to pick it up. It doesn't always need to be what I have said before. Like an artist might not be the most critical or aware of thoughtful what they're doing, but they're still going to be picked up by a gallery because the thing can sell. So it also depends on what market and things. And I go to art school in the States, and that's how a lot of galleries are in the States there, or just in Boston and, you know, New York. Like, so I was more speaking to that specifically, what they're looking for. Because their clientele, because what is their clientele, right? Like some galleries sell to curators, some galleries sell to collectors who have like $1 billion collection, who are gonna donate works to museums. So it also depends on what clientele they have.
Mm-hmm. And I was gonna mention the whole commercial aspect of it, right? Like, if it depends. I think it also depends on like how you want to approach the whole like gallery showing. Because if you're just trying to make a living, and I know, like people here in Dallas, like some artists and photographers here in Dallas, they still get some gallery shows, and it's just the same pictures of horses, pictures of like cowboys, barns, rodeos, and that shit still gets sold, and you know, I was curious because I not really a rabbit hole I went down. I was just kind of doing some searches, and I found this like gallery, and they were selling some pictures by this one photographer, and I think the guy just basically takes pictures of horses. And those pictures ended up in some car dealership, like just, you know, some car dealership out there in suburban Dallas wanted to, you know, decorate their halls with like pictures of horses because it relates to the customers, I guess, because again, like Texans are crazy about horses.
Texas.
And cars, that was a horses. Business, and the guy made a living, you know, he's making a living doing that. Yeah. So I just found out that connection. I found one of their clientele, and it's like literally just a car dealership. And if that's the route you want to go down on, I mean, that's fine. You know, if you want to just, take some stuff. But again,
that's the thing about showing your work. Like, you wouldn't know that that clientele exists until you show your work and like actually.
Yeah.
But it's not important, like, you know, if you don't want to sell your work, don't sell your work. But try and see what kind of clients pop up. Mm-hmm. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. It's one of those, like, I feel like a gallery show is kind of like a chicken and egg sort of scenario. You don't know what comes first.
Like, does the art come first, the client?
Yeah. Do you just happen to have this show and then suddenly a client shows up or someone who, you know, a customer or something wants to buy it or wants to invest in you, or someone wants to invest in you and then they want to have a gallery because they want to show off your work so that people can, you know, so I don't know.
That's why gallery shows are so desirable to an artist, right? Because it enables you to do both. Like, the gallery itself already has a collector base, and the galleries has certain connections that, you know, the marketing for your show will get sent to all of them. Mm-hmm. But then it's also a space for your work to be shown so that people who have never seen it can like see it for the first time, and people that you invite or people who just happen to like walk past a gallery. Mm-hmm. If the gallery happens to be, you know, in the city center or like, in like a prime location.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you this, without disclosing like too much detail, how is the commercial side of I guess like Hummingbird, like from exhibiting at Hummingbird, is there any sales going on, does Hummingbird have connections with collectors, or, you know, anything that can, I guess, like boost you from here?
So
or was
no,
it just like a
because they that's not their expertise, so that's that's why they're able, that's why they're lending their space out for free, and also not taking a commission, because that's the edge that galleries have, right? Like, they can they have all these things to, what's the word? They have all these things to back up the potential that they might be able to sell your works. But yeah, so the Hummingbird doesn't have that expertise, so you kind of have to do everything yourself. And I can't speak for other shows and how they've done in terms of sales. But my work, like I didn't sell anything, but I got a commission. So someone came and saw the tape collages and decided like, oh, I want to commission Lian to make a collage, but out of images that I would choose instead of the pieces that I was putting up. I was happy to do that because it was still keeping in line with, you know, with everything that I'm doing, the images that the client chose and to put on tape. Like, it was still keeping in line with what I'm making these collages for.
Yeah.
So yeah, something like that. Like, to have a space, cause are you gonna hang all your work up in your room and invite 50 people to come? You know, if you you could do that. So that would be the same thing, like an event or like something official for people to be invited to.
Yeah.
So that for me is Hummingbird. Like you just have they don't have the expertise, but you have the space that you can invite people to and see what comes out of it.
I think as any sort of artist that you want your thing to be seen or heard, or I think for a photographer, having an exhibition is kind of like almost one of the top tier things that you could do, right? Besides printing a book, making, you know, self-publishing a book, or getting your book published through a publisher, you're exposing, right, in the space. And I think that spatial element is also something that I really want to experience, because I like how a picture could feel really different when it's
in a space, sort of in front of you
in a space, and it's the space itself, the lighting, the way it's hung, and the material, the frame, all these things, right? It's just without thinking so much about the whole, oh man, like commission and like percentages and stuff like that. And so that's why I feel like that Hummingbird thing is really cool. It's really good for I think people our age, people who are just starting to get into the whole field of showing art and selling art. So yeah, I'm definitely, recommending the Hummingbird to all of you listeners. If you live in Saigon, or if you're about to live in Saigon, it's definitely a nice venue. If you just want to, show your work without thinking too much. Of course, you got to put the work in, right? Like you said, you got to frame everything yourself. And how was that too?
Like, and doing all the marketing and the graphic design yourself, because they don't have staffs to do that.
Yeah. Was that difficult for you
No, I used to do graphic design.
There you go.
Perfect. Like before the gallery. So when I was working at the gallery, I was also doing their graphic design and a little bit of their marketing. And yeah, so it's second nature to me.
Mm-hmm. What about like framing wise and hanging stuff? Because I always find that to be like kind of technically difficult for some reason. People got these laser things and trying to balance everything out.
You don't need
did
that.
Did you do that? You don't? Okay.
So that used to be like mind boggling for me as well, just because no one has ever sat me down and gave me like a workshop, like A, B, C, D, But but after working at the gallery, and it's pretty simple. Like, if anybody does hello listeners, if you do a show anywhere and you need help, just message me. I can just give you like, what's the word? I can't English these days. Sorry, guys. Sorry if my speaking on the podcast is weird as well.
It's okay. it's all good. I wanted to mention that this might just be one of those like bilingual thing that we have, because we tend to have those bilingual moments. And majority of you guys know a bit of maybe English or some Vietnamese to get through this episode. But, expect a lot of these moments, because I think what's coming up next, which is us answering those questions, I think we're definitely going to be
more bilingual.
Mentioning a few. We're going to be bilingual a little bit. I think talking about gallery, cool. But talking about those questions, because they kind of come from the Vietnamese sphere of photography. So of course we got to at least say a few things in Vietnamese. So, kind of a heads up. Okay, let's just get into it. 3, 2, 1, hello, we're back. And we got like two questions that we're going to go through rather quickly-ish, because I think Ling has to go somewhere. So let's try to, power this through. Not to say that we're going to glance over stuff. We're actually going to go into we're going to go into details for sure. Okay, Ling, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. It's not a quiz show. I don't know why I'm making it like one of those. Okay, so the first question is, how to comprehend great photographers' work?
Hmm.
yes, that's the first question.
let's break that question down first. Great photographers, like, what does that mean, right? Like, let's use the word the canon. So the canon basically refers to, like, big names, you know, Picasso is the canon and whatever. So, but there are many canons in photography. There are big photographers who are big in terms of, like, their works are in museums. And then there are photographers who are big in terms of their journalists whose work have been, you know, on the front page of all these newspapers and have historical importance in terms of documenting something. So there are all these different canons. And, you know, on the... So it depends on which canon you're talking about, that your way of appreciate, and that there are different things to appreciate about it. Like, if you're talking about a really big documentary journalist, photographer, obviously, you know, their work is going to be more straightforward to a certain extent, because you know what they're documenting, you know the story that they're trying to tell. And so you can appreciate that, them in that aspect. But there are also things like, how are they telling the story differently? Are they doing, are they doing something different? And then let's pull up an example.
Mm-hmm.
Shall I, just a second. I have it right here. So someone likes, I'm gonna butcher his name, but Stephen DuPont, for example, he made a lot of war images, but mm-hmm. you know, one project that he had was he made portraits of soldiers or marine. Yeah, he made portraits of Marines, and then he stuck it on a little notebook, and he also gave them the notebook for them to write a response to a question that he asked all of them, which was, why am I a Marine? And that is in many ways different from other documentary works that you might see elsewhere. So, you know, to talk about how to comprehend that, I mean, what are you trying to comprehend? I feel like there are many things to comprehend. Number one is, what is the artist's intent? Number two is, why do people praise this? You know, number three is understanding yourself. Like, how do you respond to this? And do you understand why you respond to this in a certain way? So all of these things are things that, you know, are things to try to understand. As far as artist's intent go, you can guess. You know, make some guess. Why did he ask this question? Why am I a Marine? Why did he give people the notebook to write down their answer? And why did he make a very traditional portrait of them instead of making, you know, something else, like shooting them in their environment, sleeping, eating? Like, why is it just a straight up portrait and the answer, you know? What is the connection there? So you can make guesses about that. And then you can read up on interviews to see what the artist's intent is. If it's in the canon, there are going to be articles, there are going to be interviews about the artist's intent. So understanding the artist's intent is really interesting to me. You know, it allows me to contrast what they're saying with what I'm getting from their work, and it becomes really interesting. And then the other thing, talking about comprehension, like, how do we understand why other people praise this? How do we understand why museums collect something? Or, and, you know, make some guesses first, because I think that's an interesting thought exercise. And then you can look up these information too. Like, you know, if a museum has had a show, a retrospective for this artist, there are going to be a lot of writings that you can read on why they think this artist is interesting to look at. And then number three is like, how do you understand your own response to this work? And that goes back to the first two questions. Like, if you had already tried to make guesses and then you've already done, you know, a little research, then you can understand more about yourself, more about what you read from a work, what you appreciate from a work, what other people are saying, what the artist was trying to say. And that will all come together in, you know, a bit of a new understanding about the work, but not understanding some sort of like, you know, meaning and understanding everything around it. You know, what was the intent? Why do people like it? Why is it circulated? Why do I feel a certain type of way about it? Is there something that I feel about it that like critics and other people have not talked about? And yeah, what context am I coming from to respond to a work like this? What do you think about that question?
That was a great answer. I enjoy listening to that so much that I'm just like, I don't know what else I'm gonna add. That was so good. I mean, like the way you answered it, I feel like it's exactly how, if I were to ask that question, because I used to be that guy who, you know, I would look at something and it would appear like I knew it was great. Like I knew whatever I was looking at was great, but I just didn't know how to like, is it great? I don't see it, you know, how is it great? How do I comprehend? And also, okay, so. I kind of want, I don't know if maybe she or they, whoever asked, sorry, probably meant to use the word comprehend, but I don't know why, but I have a problem with that word because I is that something that we do comprehend? Like, do we comprehend art like that, or do we appreciate art or relate to? I don't know. I'm having this. I was gonna ask you before I actually asked you this question too. Like, is that something that are we supposed to do, trying to comprehend something? Because to me, comprehend means a little bit different. Like, it has a different meaning, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I try to set sort of like a framework for what the word comprehending means to me. Like, comprehending here means like, you know, understanding things around it and why people feel a certain way, why I feel a certain way about something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
is great and like popular and like widely circulated, that's coming from the fact that a lot of people contributed to this, you know, circulation, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. And but because I didn't want to interrupt you, because the way you answered it with that word comprehend in mind was great. That's why I'm like, oh yeah, that's exactly how you would explain to someone how to comprehend it. But I guess how I feel about that question, I would go from a slightly different direction. Mm-hmm. I would think about appreciating, like understanding, more like understanding than comprehending. Again, very similar meaning, but to me they're kind of different, because when someone says, oh, I don't comprehend this, it's like, but let me walk you through these very technical history things for you to comprehend. But if someone's like, I don't really understand this, I would at least be a bit more personal. Like, why don't you like, what is it about? What are you seeing? And like, when someone says, I don't understand, I want to know more about them rather than getting on with explaining what it is, because I need to know, right, like how they're feeling, where they're coming from. But I feel like comprehending is such a like, oh yeah, well, let me just pull up Wikipedia and then tell you these things, and yeah, you know, like, it's, yeah, right, it's like comprehending
that's,
for me
no
is
that's
just
really
very
interesting, because in my art classes, like when professors show famous works for us to look at in class, they really don't say anything at all. Like, the first thing that they would do is to show the work and to ask, like, so what do you guys think about this? And I think one of the more interesting lessons for me have been when people have, like a very negative or a very positive response to it. And then the professor would be like, wow, like, that's surprising, because last semester when I taught the very same class, people had a different response. And, you know, like times change, contexts change, and people do have responses to it. And it becomes a really interesting conversation when you can be personal about it.
Yeah, yeah. And so with that being said, I still would take the question as it is, because I'm not trying to, you know, twist it some different way. I think, like, from you know, comprehending like great artwork or great specifically photographers' work, for me has to do with just understanding or learning, getting the knowledge about the history of this work. Why did people show it in the first place? Why was it exhibited in the first place? What was the social context and the historical context and stuff like that? I think for me, like, I guess, like, knowing the history for me is probably one of the biggest step in comprehending something. Maybe because I just love history and I like understanding sort of where things come from. Where things originate from.
Things don't exist in a vacuum. Like, things exist in society.
Yeah. And I want to bring up this example because when I was in college, I took this, like, art appreciation class, and I think...
It was titled Art Appreciation?
It's Understanding Art or something like that. But it's along the line of art appreciation.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure... Or maybe it was... It was a class in high school that was named that, and I'm mixing it up. But I did have I took both. I took some art in high school, and I took some art in college. Very basic stuff. And when we got to some chapter, I think that was was Mark Rothko, and of course, if this is a video, we'll be illustrating Rothko's work. But if you guys know what I'm talking about, it's just like color blocks. Sort of bleeding into each other. And I think a classmate or a student in that class, I think they had a question. They're like, well, I don't see this. I don't get it. You know, why is this great? And stuff like that. And I remember the professor, they kind of went into detail like, well, it's, you know, everybody's interpretation will be respected in this class. And, you know, I'm going to take that as a, well, like, basically, you have a question, right? Like, you don't understand this, you don't comprehend this, or whatever. And then professor starts showing sort of the whole kind of history. Like, I mean, the artist didn't just make this out of nowhere. I mean, there was sort of the lead up, and then, you know, and then at the time, what was going on, and obviously, you know,
completely changes your response, and not that the initial response was not valid. It is very valid, but you have to remember to limit that to your personal realm. Like, it's so easy to go like, I don't comprehend this, and people who praise this and people who like make this out to be something huge are just crazy. And that's a flaw in critical thinking, right? To kind of hint towards the second question, but not to rush the conversation or anything. But yeah, that's a flaw in critical thinking. You know, that is very valid how you feel about something, but make sure that it's just you're talking about. You know, just because you don't understand it doesn't mean that other people has put this work on a pedestal for no reason.
And it's such a, I feel like it's such an annoying misconception I hear, and I still hear this a lot, that like, oh yeah, art is just like some BS that someone made up, right? Like that joke that a lot of people make. It's like, oh, you just make up some stuff and it becomes art. I'm like, well, can you make up that stuff? You know, like,
yeah, exactly.
Can you make that up? I mean, you know, people like shit on Jackson Pollock and, you know, whatever, like all these sort of, what do you call it? I guess modern visual artists, and also some contemporary ones, for especially the contemporary ones that, you know, like that banana taped on the wall thing that happened like last year or something, a few months ago. You know, people love to shit on that kind of stuff. And but like, that's, you know, like you said, make sure that if you don't understand, it's just you, that you don't understand how to. And that's a totally valid point and you know, perspective to be coming from. We're all learning something, right? And even in photography, there are still things that I don't really know how to comprehend or appreciate. certain great photographers out there.
Yeah, like I don't blame people and I don't blame myself when I don't understand something because, yeah, like we can't know everything in the world. Like it only makes sense that we don't know things or don't get certain things. Or,
yeah,
and like with someone like Jackson Pollock and abstract expressionism, right? Like if you, the context of that is that it was during the Cold War and the US government was very much backing these artists because it was the antithesis of what, you know, the Soviet artists were doing. So, so that also answer the question of like why this work is in the canon. Like it could be, yeah, like it was great in like the artistic way, but it was also politically pushed to become, to be in the canon. So things like that, you know?
Yeah. This is sort of my own take, a bit more of my own take when it comes to just looking at something so great that you just don't know, or you know it's great, but you don't really get it. It's just to kind of take it slow. Like you don't have to, you don't have to buy into it right away, but definitely do your research before you start deeming it not worthy or something like that, or, you know, bandwagon on other things. Like definitely understand the context, and then maybe perhaps with that you get to understand it more. You don't have to enjoy it, but at least you get to, oh yeah, I can see why people look up to it, I can see why it's being shown. So I think like, yeah.
Ooh, that's a really good point. Like understanding why it's being shown is really interesting.
Yeah.
Because just because it's in the museum doesn't mean everybody in the world worships it, right? Like it's there, you know, like the museum is its own thing of like who donates to the museum, you know, where the museum is getting their money from, and, you know, that all plays into what is getting shown.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to the next one. We're not rushing, but, you know, it's just I don't like staying on a question too long because then I start getting delirious and I start ranting about stuff. Okay. Next one. I'm just going to rephrase a little bit. What are some of the common mistakes in quotation marks? Tư duy nhiếp ảnh. Or I guess if you translate that, it would be critical thinking in photography.
Yeah.
Something like that. Or just thinking about photography, which I think is a funny translation. Who else just thinks about photography, right? I mean, I do. I think about photography a lot. But yeah, so what are some of the common mistakes in critical thinking in photography?
I mean, first of all, I think critical thinking is just critical thinking. I don't think there's photographic critical thinking. There's just critical thinking. And I think that, like, that reminds me of, like, what is it? Logical fallacies? Logical fallacies. Common mistakes in logical / critical thinking, and I feel like that can be applied to everything. So maybe we can go through the list and see if this can apply, if we can think of like some imaginary,
let's go through the list,
example of how this can happen in photography.
So
first one, ad hominem, and that is focus on the logic and validity of an argument instead of making it about the person. And this is from the Our Purdue website. So ad hominem, an example is Greenpeace strategies aren't effective because they're all dirty, lazy hippies.
Ah, there we go. Like essentially attacking the human aspect of the argument.
Yeah.
I guess.
Or the human behind the work. The human behind the work.
Okay. Well, this is pretty easy in photography. It's just when you dislike, I guess, or you attack a work just because you don't like the artist, or you make a comment on the artist because, you know, the artist, they're so and so, you know, they wear a red shirt all the time and I don't like that, you know, something like that. So I think that would be
like
an example.
Saying like, oh, like abstract photographers are all lazy, artsy people who bullshit. So therefore, I don't make the work. Instead of actually analyzing the work
So that's one. Okay.
So the next one, either or. This is a conclusion that oversimplifies the argument by reducing it to two extremes. For example, we can either stop using cars or destroy the earth.
Okay. This one, in photography specifically, I think can be manipulated in a couple of ways. I think one that I've seen is just like you either... It's like you either do, it's usually has to do, and I do want to get into specifics, but I think for now, I can only articulate in just very general terms. But essentially, it's like you either get a job in photography, or you're going to, you know, like be a starving artist or something. Like either you commercialize yourself or you're going to starve.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this has to do with like career, like wise and like finding a job and making a living in with photography. I see this a lot. A lot of people tend to kind of argue that you got to go commercial, otherwise you're just going to starve, you know. And I obviously disagree because I'm not commercial and I'm not starving yet. And I'm still doing photography
kind of
full-time-ish, you know.
Yeah.
And same as you, you're not fully commercializing your photography, but you know, you're still making a living with, you know, and essentially what I think my point here, what I'm driving at is, you know, this kind of argument is very common to discourage photographers who want to do photography, but also don't want to starve, and they seek advice from like people with experience, these sort of, you know, veterans of the industry, and then they get that sort of either or fallacy a lot, and then they get discouraged, and then they go sell their soul and become a commercial photographer.
That's
a joke,
by
the way.
No, I mean
commercial.
That's why I wanted the career podcast that I did to be very like open ended. Like like I was also thinking like, oh, like someone could watch this and be like, so what is the point being made? And that's the point. Like, mm-hmm. there's no point being made. Like, these are all people mm-hmm. who make a living and they do photography. But mm-hmm. yet there's no point being made about what if you have to choose one thing or the other thing, because mm-hmm. that's life. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's the flexibility of decision making is something that you guys, if you don't understand this already, it's true. Like, it's never, I don't think it's, things aren't always just, you know, either or, black and white, you know, whatever. Like, if you don't do this, you're gonna end up like that. There are options, and when you make a decision, there's that sort of flexibility, because if you make a decision to do photography full time, but if you gotta support it, you gotta do just, you know, get a job that may not have to do with taking pictures, per se, but maybe have something to do with like maybe on the editorial side, or you're a fixer, or you're, you know, translator for a crew or film crew, like things that keep you kind of grounded, keep you in the zone, so that you don't completely stray away from photography. Or you become a freelancer. That's also another way. I mean, technically, that's kind of commercializing yourself a little bit, but you know, it's not 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, definitely something I see a lot. Not fully, and I don't know if put in art terms, I may have to leave that up to you, because I don't know. I haven't really seen that, or at least like give like a specific example, a real example of it being used in the artistic side of photography, but definitely on the career side of like money making.
Well, I guess on the like the making the picture side, either or, I can see that in terms of like stage or like candid photography, right? Like saying like,
oh,
you
yes,
can
yes.
either stage your subject and this becomes like a stage thing, or you can candidly shoot and it becomes like a documentary thing. But it's not like that. Mm-hmm. This is something that photographers have been doing for the past few decades, you know, challenging that, you know, what can you stage and call it documentary photography, or can you, you know, do something conceptual, but it being very candid. Let's use mm-hmm. examples. Like, I feel like your your photos on, they can be the way that you sequence things together and the end result, like especially for the more recent stuff, can be construed as conceptual, especially like Dreamwalker, that's super conceptual. But the photos were like candidly taken, right? Like they were not staged. So yeah. So that's an example of that. Or
they could be staged. They could be staged.
Oh, they could. Okay. I don't know that. Yeah. So yeah, that's another example of either or.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The next fallacy is straw man. This move oversimplifies an opponent's viewpoint and then attacks that hollow argument. So basically, straw man, like building a straw man just to knock it down. Like you're making something into a simplified straw man version of itself just to knock it down.
Okay, so I'll admit I thought I had something for this one, but then I think I misunderstood the fallacy. But now I get it, and I think it's gonna take me a minute. So if you want to go first, you could, if you can think of something right now.
Yeah, if you're, let's say you're like making a photo project about responding to fast fashion, or like it's your argument to fast fashion, right? Like it's important to not oversimplify fast fashion down to, let's say, like you could have simplified it and like make it down to being about speed and like constant changing trends, and make your photos comment on that and then say, you know, that this is but there are many things that can be talked about fast fashion, like why does fast fashion even exist, like it people only buy it because it's constantly being updated, or is it because it's cheap and a lot of people kind of need to buy things at that price point? Yeah, so acknowledging that, I guess, could be an example.
So I have a question. So with that example, where's that destroying bit or like, you know, knocking it down essentially?
If your project is trying to advocate the stance of anti-fast fashion. So you're oversimplifying the problem or the topic of fast fashion down to being about one thing.
Oh,
when it could be about all these other things as well.
Yeah. I still have it. Whatever I came up with, I think it still applies. It's weird. Like thinking about fallacies have always been kind of, I don't know why, tricky for me to like navigate. But I think the example I thought of was just, you know, people like to, well, it's kind of a back and forth thing, but from my own side of things, because I shoot film a lot, so I know film photographers love to bash on digital photographers, and you know that sometimes they kind of make that argument, they simplify, you know, the either whatever they're talking about, like maybe it could be patience, or you know, whatever one thing that they're trying to bash or argue against digital photography, they essentially, you know, basically pull it apart and just pick out just one very simple thing, like, oh, digital photography is bland. And then they like say, and that's why, you know, if you do digital photography, you're going to be, your pictures are going to be boring, or, you know, is that correct? Like,
yeah,
right?
That's what I thought of. Like picking out like a very small simplified part of it and then take it down and thinking that you've taken in everything, but you haven't. You're just taking down like one thing from it.
Yeah. Okay. So I still got it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's why when you.
Like I guess saying like looking at a sequence of work and saying like I can't understand the narrative from it, it means it's bad. But like a photographic work can be successful in like a lot of other ways. It doesn't always have to have like a narrative.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't always have to look good for that matter. Like there are all these different things about it.
Yeah, or like a narrative that would cater to you.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, sometimes you might not be the target, and like that's probably okay. But you know, making that sort of argument, I guess that would be a straw man. You just pick out just that one thing, like, oh, it's grotesque, or it's, you know, it's sexist or whatever, and then you hate you. That's your argument, and then you're like, yeah, I've taken it down, and that's basically, you know, why I don't like it, and that's yeah. So I think that's probably more common than I think. I don't know. I could only think of gear because I you know, you see that sort of back and forth a lot, and you know,
yeah, I mean that's very applicable too. Yeah. Like if yeah. like in yeah. the decision making of like what gear should I use for. Mm-hmm. My practice, like, should I be a digital or should I be a film photographer? You know, there's that,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
oversimplifying yeah. things when you could mm-hmm. be a lot more open and experimental with what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. And the, oh, the like, one like
you,
sort of
Jung, got... Sorry, Jung said something like this, you know, like Jung in another podcast, he said like, oh, he used to look at your picture and he used to be like, why should you shoot in black and white? Like the world's in color. But obviously, mm-hmm. yes, that's like a very simplified point of everything that black and white photos can mm-hmm. be. It's not about mm-hmm. representing colors into black and white. It can also be about yeah. everything else, about mood, about whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like he later on started doing black and white photography too.
Yeah, he asked me that question so many times, and it would always be like, you know, genuinely curious why I chose black and white as a medium. Mm-hmm. To express my photography, and like, you know, the number one answer is because it's cheap, and that was how I
exactly kind of and that's came completely different from what he was yeah, assuming yeah. right, like he was assuming mm-hmm. like
yeah
you're reducing the world into two colors mm-hmm. but for you it's like yeah. it's just fucking cost, man, like yeah. just cheap.
it's just nearby, it's just right there, and you know, I had
you
a pack
can process
of
it at home. Well,
yeah, yeah, exactly, it's budget friendly. And there's no big idea behind it, or there wasn't a big idea, but you know, later on I learned to appreciate it, and I learned to fully use that that medium to express myself. But it doesn't mean I don't shoot color. I shoot a lot of color.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't really have that to be the representing feature about my work. It's just, you know, it's kind of there. But that also, I guess, that brings up another sort of point, I guess, that like, you know, that like color versus black and white sort of battle, I guess, this sort of fallacy can also apply to this, because people love to simplify one thing, like one type of medium, of like how color is, or I love this one, like black and white is edgy, you know. I keep hearing this expression being thrown around. Black and white is edgy, black and white is artsy and stuff like that. And it's like, that's why you use it, because, you know, you want to make it. And I'm like, no, it's not. It doesn't make it better or worse. It's just, you don't, I mean, there's so many things. There's yeah. so many, you know, so many things that played into the decision making process and then the art making process of the artist that you may not know about. So it's better that you ask them about the process rather than making that as like an assumption or an argument like, oh, you chose that because it's artsy or it's edgy, right? No, it's yeah, it's not like that. For me, it was cheap, so that's my answer.
Oh yeah, and, so yesterday I had one of my first critiques of this semester, and before we had the critique, the professor set out some guidelines, and she was like, I implore you guys not to talk about how you would have done it differently. Just talk about the work, because it's so easy to get into yeah, like, what if you just burn all your photos and throw them into the ocean and like swim in the ocean? Like, I feel like that would speak to like whatever, but like, no, I didn't do that. I didn't put my work to the ocean. Like, this is the work on the wall. Like, what does that do for you, and what does it not do for you? Like, talk about that, and then I would decide how I will carry on with the work. So it's like the mm-hmm. the black and white, like, When Jung asked that, it was a curiosity, right? Like, why do you choose mm-hmm. that? You know, it wasn't a, like, somebody else could have been like, oh yeah, like, what if you did all these photos in color? But it's not like I didn't. I did all of these in black and white. And like, does that come short for you? Where does that come out short for you? Or does it at all? You know, if it doesn't, then mm-hmm. we don't need to get into that.
Yeah. That's a smarter way of critiquing, or at least just like asking about someone else's choice. Besides just, I mean, always implementing what you would have done is always kind of annoying to me, especially because I don't know. I just don't care. It's like, you would do that?
Yeah, you would do that.
Cool. I mean,
you do that.
Yeah, do it. You do you. You do you, man. I'm not going to do that. So, but I guess we're at this point and kind of sort of wrapping it up a little bit. But before we go, regarding the question itself, like common mistakes, and you know, do you have like, I guess, should we say a bit more about what critical thinking and like is like, or are these mistakes, are they even mistakes, or like you know, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but essentially it's like, does it matter, you know, it, you know, does it matter to one photographer or artist, you know, when it comes to thinking about these fallacies, are these fallacies even fallacies, or are they just kind of things that we do, and it's kind of inevitable, you know, are they even mistakes at all, and is there such a thing as critical thinking in photography? It's kind of a weird question, but yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well, if yeah, you get it. Yeah, I would say yes, there is critical thinking in photography because there's critical thinking in everything.
Yeah.
I think all of these fallacies are not only applicable to like writing or research or photography or like whatever professional or hobbyist thing that you do, it also impacts interpersonal relationship. Like you can have these logical fallacies when you deal with another person, and you know, that's what leads to like misunderstanding and miscommunication. So yeah, like for me, like critical thinking is an important part of life, and
just in general.
mistakes are mistakes in terms of not like right or wrong, I guess, but more of like I do think that things can be better when these mistakes are not made, better in terms of like mutual understanding, mutual respect, or yeah.
Mm-hmm. The reason why I asked is just because the way I came into photography, I really didn't have no guidance, one, and or like real true professional guidance. I didn't have a mentor. I didn't go through school. It was all self-taught. And because of that, you know, the second point that I'm about to make is because of that, I had no like pressure. I didn't consider anything I did was mistakes. They were definitely learning steps for me, like stepping stones. And I sort of enjoyed, I would say that too. I enjoyed the process of making those mistakes, of having those stepping stones. Would I avoid those mistakes? I mean, I would say no. If I had to do it all over again, I still would do all those mistakes because that was how I got here. I mean, without those stones, I would have stepped somewhere else, would fall in the water, you know? And that's my take on this sort of this.
But you did get here. You know what I mean?
Yes. Like, yeah. Yeah.
You wouldn't redo it, but like those got you here in a certain way. Like for me, like the mistakes that I did led to other people telling me that you could do it differently, and that's how I improved. Mm-hmm. You know. So I yeah. So like things.
But lead to things. I think what. And that's why I feel like the problem with this question, and you see this a lot, top five mistakes to avoid when doing A, B, or C, right? It's always these sort of advice giving sources telling you to avoid, or, and I'm not assuming, okay, I'm not saying the person asking this question is asking to avoid the mistakes. So if that's the case, then yeah, like let us know. I'm just saying that in general, I feel like, yeah, it's important to be aware of the mistakes, but it's also okay to make those mistakes. But
You said,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So back, I agree, back to the the color of blue and sad things, right? Like, I am not telling you that if you wanted to work on a project about sadness, you should not be photographing a blue sky. That's not what I'm saying. But it would be interesting if you're trying to work on a project about sadness and you look at your photos and they're all blue skies. So the question is, you know, is the blue really representing sadness, or should I understand myself in a different way? Am I actually like an optimistic person or something? So definitely not like a five mistakes to avoid, but like understand where you're getting your argument from, and that should help you to understand yourself better, right?
Yeah, of course. And you know, with that being said, I also want to slightly mention that some of these things you see on the internet, and especially about photography, I know there's like a lot of people talking about photography these days on YouTube and, you know, whatnot on Instagram, even Beautiful Noise, we're talking about photography, us included. You really should take everything with a grain of salt, unless you're in school. But, you know,
even when you're in school, you should take everything with a grain of salt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, even when you're in school. But the reason why I'm making that an exception is because, well, if you're in school, then you should be, you know, you got your classmates and your professors, and you should be consulting with them and getting a bit more from them than like the internet. But of course, you know, the internet is also great. Don't just absorb everything. Like, if we're saying these mistakes now, they could be successful stepping stones for you. Like, as you know, like how I mentioned, you know, I was a gearhead, and because I was a gearhead, I was making all these fallacies. But because of that, it brought me to the point where I found the stuff that I wanted to stick with, the gear that I wanted to stick with, because I was so selective and I was making all these assumptions, but somehow it led me here, and I can't fully explain how. But of course, you know, should you avoid it? I mean, I would say, yeah, avoid some of these fallacies, but also kind of understand that you can't have to go through these things, you know, to get to where you want to be. So don't box yourself in. I know I say this a lot. I mentioned this a whole lot, like in other episodes too. I don't like the idea of someone kind of being boxed in into this world of perfection, and you got to do these things, you got to follow steps, and you know, to greatness or something like that. You know, certainly like have fun and like be open-minded, I think, and like also appreciate the fuck ups that you've done. I think it's always good to look back. I mean, and you know, stepping stones, use mistakes to like kind of, you know, move forward, I think. And that's an important, I guess, for me, a factor, because again, I self-taught myself. So I don't know what I would have done if I had gotten so stressed out about mistakes. I don't think I would have gone anywhere. But the fact was, no one said anything to me. No one made any comments. And I basically practiced photography before Instagram was really a big deal.
That's a practice of critical thinking on your part, you know, like reading an article saying this camera sucks, but then experiencing it and being like, I actually like this camera. Like, you know, you're practicing thinking there. You're not just blindly going, believing this, you know, guy, whoever wrote the blog.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's critical thinking right there. And I think critical thinking in itself should be flawless. So to say common mistakes in critical thinking is kind of like, for me, that's kind of my problem with this question. Like, I'm just going to say it right now. Like, critical thinking should be flawless. I mean, if it's not, if it's flawed, then I feel like
it's not critical. It's not critical.
It's not critical.
Yeah.
Then it's not critical, right? So to say that if you are already being critical, then those fallacies should already been bounced off and avoided. Like, you should have been like, like you said, like, I read that article because I had critical thinking. I'm like, oh, this is bullshit. I'm still going to get that camera because I recognize that fallacy. So I guess the takeaway point is, if you are already critical thinking about stuff, or you're thinking really hard about photography, and you have these, you know, sort of these moments where you're like super focused, then yeah, you... Just do that one thing. You're zoned in. Just do that one thing. Don't worry about these mistakes, because you're probably not making those mistakes anyway if you're already very honed in. But then at the same time, just, I don't know, relax, have fun. Yeah, like photography is fun. So that's my other point too. You know, it's such a, that's why I keep doing it. You know, it shouldn't be stressful. So, all right. So I think that's a wrap for this episode.
Wow, it's been 2 hours, 20 minutes. It's crazy.
Yeah, crazy. Of course, it actually won't be that long, yeah, you know, yeah, whenever we edit this, but okay, so I'm gonna do a little outro thing, so I want to say that thing again, and that's a wrap for this episode. Thank you, Ling, for taking the time out of your morning, very busy morning, to talk to me, and I'm gonna go to sleep now. It's way past my bedtime.
Yeah, I gotta go start my day.
So do you have any parting thoughts? Anything?
Thank you for supporting us. Your questions, you know, you asking us that questions gave us an opportunity for us to ask each other that question. Like, we haven't really had this conversation before, you know? Let's all have conversation.
Yeah, let's make noise. Let's all make noise. Okay, so one more thing. We're using Discord to talk, and that reminds me that Beautiful Noise Collective has a Discord server, and it's currently open. We're not making it a huge announcement or anything like that, just because we kind of want to keep, we wanted to keep it on a DL at the first, on a download, during the initial phase of us making it, because we thought maybe just for patrons on Patreon, but then later on we thought, nah, let's just open it for people to join. So if you're interested in joining, it's completely, you know, you can lurk, you can read, you don't have to respond. We have different segments, or I guess they're called channels, talk about stuff, talk about resources, advice. You know, if you just want to talk shit, join the server and talk. And also, like, these questions, they come from that server. So you got questions, if you just want to talk to us, or you want your concerns to be discussed on the podcast, head on to our Discord and just start discoursing. Or is that even, yes, a word? Discourse? Anyway, just start talking. Start conversations. All right. So thank you for listening. And we will see you next time, whenever that might be. So stay tuned. Bye, Ling.
Bye, An. I'm lying on the moon. My dear, I'll be there soon. It's a times where it's wild.